fires it into wide open. Remarkable. Touchdown, Buffalo. Davis again. Down the middle. It's Hill in the open. Cuts it upfield. He might be gone. He is. Kansas City takes the lead with a minute to go from 64 incredible yards. Down the middle to the end zone. And there it is. Touchdown number 4 on the night for Davis.
I'm so nervous.
So hundreds of thousands around the planet. The kick is good. It's going overtime to the end zone for the win. He caught it. Ball game. Chiefs to the championship game.
I still can't believe we saw that. It's the Fan Morning Show. Pete Buckus, Blake Murphy, and yes, the dejected Ailish Forfar. Hey, this is breaks of the game right here. Okay, this is the game is the game. You know, you live high on the hog. You get to watch great sporting events, but for the vast majority of the time, and this is a reminder for you as a sports fan, sports just they ultimately result in pain. As fun as everything is, it's just everybody is here at the end of it, except for one team, and. Welcome to this job, Ailish Forfar, where not only do you have to suffer the loss, but you no longer get to go stick your head in the sand and ignore it for the next 2 weeks. You don't get to just go to a desert island. You don't get to be cast away and avoid it. You have to deal with it right away, immediately. Your ghost, right away. Oh my God, what a game. How you feeling, kid?
Don't have words. I was hoping to take this morning off. I got suckered into coming on air. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't think it's I've ever seen, obviously, I don't think anyone's ever seen a game like last night. Let's just say that in general. I think that was probably one of the best postseason NFL games we'll ever see. What an exciting opportunity to be involved in that conversation. Unfortunately, you're going to be on the other side of the discussion forever. The 13 seconds thing, the just everything, the coin toss. There's just so much to unpack. I will say, however, losing in that type of moment is more exciting and more worth it than losing in regulation. Like, I thought, wow, you know what? This is going to be something, that legendary moment. Unfortunately, we lost the coin toss. Fortunately, Patrick Mahomes is just incredible. But I think if you're a Bills fan, you have a lot of respect. You have a lot of got hurt this morning, but I ultimately feel like they did everything they could do. I mean, Josh Allen did everything he could do, and that's basically all you can kind of ask for. A lot of bad coaching calls, maybe a lot of things we can nitpick, but I feel a little better than I thought. Maybe it just hasn't sunk in yet.
This is the fastest anyone has ever gone through the stages of grief.
You that was a lot started, right there. I know. Like, yeah. She just did it. She just like poured it all out. Like, and it's bad, and it's good, and now, and I'm over it, and I'm proud of my team, and it's over, and I'm not ready.
Well,
and
maybe I feel like coaches, a wide range of emotions, though. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I left that game with one specific emotion. There's frustration. There's, you know, pride. There's devastation. There's anger. I don't know. It's just like a whirlpool in my brain. At one moment, one might come out and I might be happy and I might be like, you know what? We did our best. And then I might be absolutely boycotting the use of coins for the rest of my life. If I ever see a coin or I ever touch a coin, I'm
go cashless, NFL. Come on.
I'm going to go cashless. I'm never touching money again in my life. Tapping away. Never want to see a coin. There's just a wide range of feelings right now.
So 2 minutes left in the game and Josh Allen whips a 27-yard touchdown to Gabe Davis, who just, you know, an obscene day.
The legend.
An unprecedented day. Yeah, solidifies himself as a forever playoff legend. Mm-hmm. Two-point conversion where everything looks broken down and Josh Allen just does Josh Allen things where the play is completely broken. He's scrambling outside the pocket. And yet somehow, some way, he makes a play to give the Chiefs a three-point lead. Mahomes immediately responds. Less than 50 seconds later, chucks one to Tyreek Hill. We get the vintage Tyreek Hill peace sign throw up. And it's funny because it happens. They're up 4 points and there's a minute left, and all everyone is thinking is you've left too much time for Josh Allen. The way that he's playing, you have left way too much time for Josh Allen. Timeouts, they're fine. A minute is an eternity. 13 seconds, though. That's after Josh Allen does what Josh Allen, we think he's going to do. He goes down the field again. Another touchdown. And it's to Davis again, a 19-yard strike. 13 seconds. That's what I think Bills fans will just be haunted by forever. That call, when Tony Romo, when they hit that first play, and he went, oh, my God, they have a chance. I think the entire universe knew it. Every person knew it. Bills fans knew it, and but I think Bills fans in that moment are going, no, I know this is going to happen. Oh, my God, this is going to happen. But deep down in your heart, you're like, there's no way this is going to happen. That was the best 2 minutes in the history of football, potentially. I can't imagine being a fan of sports and not having seen last night. Like, that's an all-time regret moment. Like, imagine something, you know, you had to leave the house, somebody made you do an errand, the last... That was incredible. 13 seconds, Patrick Mahomes. 13 seconds. And his two devastating weapons to tie that game. We'll get into the overtime rules, but I'm just... Ailish, I especially feel bad for you today because this is a moment where I'm even glad, you know, one of my teams didn't play, right? Where I'm just grateful that I got to watch that play out and feel nothing but joy. And that's the thing that especially sucks for Bills fans is that not only did you lose, you lost in one of the most iconic moments in the history of the game. Like, we just saw a weekend where every game ended with the final play. And I remember going into that Bills-Chiefs game almost thinking, it's absurd that this is the last game of this slate because everything has been so good up to this point that there's no way that this game can be better than what we've been seeing so far. It can't beat it, but you knew that it had the highest drama and that it could at least have a chance. And then for it to do that is just... I'm the opposite of you, where I'm just sitting here with gratitude from sports. For I never feel this. I always feel pain. I'm with you. I'm always upset. You lose a bet. You do something. That was just brilliance. But 13 seconds has to be... I just don't even know what to equate it to in terms of a loss. Like, 13 seconds to lose... is just after that performance by Allen, after that gutsy comeback, after watching Allen up and down the sidelines, screaming in his teammates' faces, seeing the joy on the Bills' faces, I don't think we'll ever see that again. 13 seconds is... The game is over with 13 seconds left, okay? 13 seconds, the football games are over. I just can't get over it. I cannot get over it.
So my stages of... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, my stages of watching the game felt exactly what you're going through. Like, just the last 2 minutes alone, I didn't sit. I was pacing my entire apartment. I couldn't.
I wouldn't respect you if you sat down. If you were sitting down those last 2 minutes, you're not a Bills fan.
Even when they made the... They get ahead and there's 13 seconds left. You're right. That feeling deep down, you're like, this is not going to... Like, this isn't enough. And then the decision to not do the squib
13
kick
seconds left, you felt like it wasn't over?
Oh, like, my initial feeling was like, that's a lot of time for Patrick Mahomes. And then you go on Twitter and everyone's saying the same
13 seconds?
Thing. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, my God, no.
That's because you don't feel confident yet. No, I just think that Bills fans, we were like, I don't know. It's not over till it's over. This is going to be one of those iconic games. We had already seen that there's like four lead changes in the last 2 minutes. I didn't feel like it was over because, first of all, you're on the road. There's so, that stadium... I don't know. Like, it's the loudest in sports. Like, you're just, you can't even hear. Like, imagine the rush of Patrick Mahomes making that first, the first down on that play. You were just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm looking back with.
No, but they had two plays, Ailish. They had two plays to go down and get that field goal. And then they also, this is the other part that should be remembered. They also needed a field goal from a guy that doinked an extra point and missed a field goal in that game and looked shaky, who barely put one inside the bar.
It was a longer kick too, what, 49 yards or something? That's when I sat there and I'm like, okay, this could be it. Once he got in position, I'm like, okay, do I really feel confident this is going to happen? But at that point, you're like, the pain. You know the pain's coming. You know the overtime's coming. Maybe it's like Leaf fans. I try to equate it to like, okay, here we go. This is a playoff situation again. Are they going to blow this? Like, maybe there's just that little bit of emotional damage that you're not fully in. And I'm also looking back with the idea of I know what happened. So maybe I'm looking back with like, okay, I never felt confident. But if you look on Twitter, I think a lot of people were feeling the same way with 13 seconds is a long time for Patrick Mahomes. Okay. I don't know if every single person in the world thought it, but any other quarterback, you give him that amount of time, Patrick Mahomes is going to get it done. So it was the battle of the quarterbacks. That's what we predicted going into this. We talked about it all week last week. It was going to be the game of the weekend, and it surely did not disappoint. Even the way that it ended, you know, I think you leave with the feeling of like it would have been different if Josh Allen won the coin toss. You know, I truly think the Bills would be the ones celebrating, but that's just like how sports go.
We'll
like
go there.
It sucks. It sucks so bad, but what can you do?
Yeah,
get there the stages of grief, or you're all over the map.
I'm all over the map.
Yeah. You're supposed to go sequentially. You're not supposed to. Yeah. You're not supposed to go backwards.
Yeah,
she's going to be denying it. Yeah. She'll be Aaron Rodgers level of denial by the end of this show. Like, no, actually,
they
Bills won. The Bills won. Yeah. I did my own research.
Blake, you can tell too. So Ailish, obviously being an athlete and being a hockey player, that there is the respectful side of her in a loss where she's really trying to tip the cap to Mahomes and she's really trying
to win. Like,
game,
keep her stick on the
ice. But by the end of the show, Ailish is going to be like, really, all I can think of is the coin toss, and it's all the fault of the NFL, and why do the Chiefs get any credit? And let's go back and look at that clock, you know, hometown officiating, blah, 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 blah.
Nah. I can respect both sides of it. And maybe that is special because I am an athlete and I get it. But like, maybe I'm also just like in love with sports so much that like last night I sat there and I looked at that graphic, I think Sportsnet Stats tweeted it, of how every single play of this weekend came down to the final play. And I'm like, like we are so lucky to have seen such an incredible weekend of football, and everyone else that was a fan of those teams that lost, that wasn't as devastating as the Bills, but it was one of those games where you're like, oh my God, how did that happen? Right. It just kept getting better and better and better. So yeah, the grievance, the stages of grief, it's tough over here.
Yeah. So maybe it's that you're just such a big sports fan. My working theory right now is that it's broken you. And that's why you are feeling a lot of things mildly, and then eventually you just won't feel anything. In terms of the closest of the games, though, Ailish, if you guys remember back to Friday, I teed up that this was the closest set of lines in playoff history. Ended up being the closest set of games in playoff history as well. 15 points total margin of victory across four games, beating the previous record of 18. That is wild.
Yeah, that's the part of it that we also didn't even discuss, is just like being a Bills better. 13 seconds, picking that as an underdog pick is just, that's a shattering. You don't get the cover, you get nothing, you just get no recompense. There's just, that is one of those things where I really did think at one moment last night, hey, dear sports books, just pay people out, you know? Like, imagine you lost that Rams bet, if you had picked the Rams as underdogs and Tampa had won, you're just devastated. So, Ailish, this is the way that I'm going to, you know, sort of pivot into some of the other things here is, and into Josh Allen, into the Bills, and into the Chiefs, is that in the pantheon or the power rankings of who feels the worst today, there's an immediacy moment with the Bills. I understand that as a Bills fan, a lot of people must be going, we're the team that has the four Super Bowl losses. We're the team that has the missed field goal. We're just that team, and we're going to be that team forever. And, of course, we end up coming out of the short end of the stick, 13 seconds, another moment that is going to be iconic against us after Josh Allen did that. But when I look at the losers from the weekend, I feel the least sorry for Bills fans. Mm-hmm. I really do. I look at it and I go, you have that quarterback who just put on that performance. Like, Josh Allen was a goddamn machine in that game. He was terrifying. For someone to be as scary as Patrick Mahomes in a big playoff game, I'm sorry. I can't feel that bad for you. And yes, of course, sports end up having a way where it's not always where the figure stays that way and they continue to roll through the rest of their career. And yes, is Patrick Mahomes always going to be waiting there? Of course, of course, of course. But Josh Allen, without a doubt, entered the top tier pantheon. I think we had Ben Solak on when we were talking about who is elite in the NFL and how, hey, you need to be respectful.
Yeah, he wasn't ready to give him that title yet. I remember.
There's no more you have to be respectful of the word elite. Josh Allen is 100% elite. There is no quarterback in the NFL right now that is blending pure athleticism and badassery and the ability to throw like Josh Allen right now. And you just see the way that his teammates love him and believe in him on the sidelines, the way that he interacts with all of his teammates. And, like, I swear to God, there's something about just, like, the size of the guy where he's walking up to defensive players, and they must be thinking this guy could probably line up as an edge rusher. But I just have supreme confidence in where the Bills are going and what the Bills are doing. You have a front office and a head coach who are aligned in their vision. You have a quarterback who is, if you're starting tomorrow, genuinely there's a debate as to just whether he would go one or two with Mahomes. He's 25 years old. Like, he's not going anywhere. You have a team that is going to have a lot of continuity moving forward. There's no pieces in the Bills that are really aging out here, right? Like, who's the player that you're worried about losing or getting too old? I don't see really who that is. And now you just have an offseason where there's a chip on your shoulder, and moving forward, you just have even more motivation to slay the dragon. I love where the Bills are at. Like, think about being a Packers fan today. You went into this weekend thinking, oh, our quarterback is dialed in, he's the MVP, and we're rested, and we have home field advantage, and we're going to go to the finals, and all that stuff about about our quarterback leaving, it's done. And nope, all of a sudden you wake up, and maybe Aaron Rodgers is gone. If you're a Bucks fan, you're thinking, well, we got one from Tom Brady, but Tom might be gone. If you're a Titans fan, you're like, oh my God, we're frauds forever. Like, we're just frauds. We're always the fraud team, and everyone makes fun of us, and Dan Hanzus calls us the Titoons, and we can't even beat the Cincinnati freaking Bengals when they're rookie quarterback. Like, the one time we're going to beat Joe Burrow, essentially, the one time we're ever going to beat this guy in his career, and we blew it. We blew it with three Ryan Tannehill touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still, as heartbreaking as that loss was, Bills fans, even with your history, you're at the bottom of the sympathy rankings because of what you have, which is the envy of every sports fan in the universe. You have one of the most exciting players at the most important position in all of sports. It's incredible. Like, that has to undercut the loss to a certain degree. And I think, Ailish, that's why you're kind of going through that process so quickly, is you can't feel that bad when you have that Josh Allen. Like, what a treat of a player to have.
So I see all of your reasoning, and I do agree on multiple reasons why today is more of like, hey, look at the big picture type of thing. In the moment, I feel bad for Bills fans and myself for a multitude of reasons. That was a devastating loss, okay? Like, it wasn't like you just got smoked. Like, you lost in the most devastating and iconic way of all time. That sucks. Yeah. Secondly,
it's going to be replayed forever.
Yes, it's going to be one of those things that we talk about. 13 seconds. It's going to be like when the Leafs blew the three. Yeah, it's going to be like that, and you're going to always remember that. Yes, I know that, okay, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder, but they had that last year, and it's like this really felt like the year, especially when the Bengals won, that they were going to make it to the Super Bowl. Like, they were about to play the Bengals next week. No doubt they were going to win that. No, they were going to make it to the Super Bowl.
I didn't factor that in, that it's like...
Like, when the Bengals won, I was like, oh my God, here we go.
Yeah, I know.
When the Bengals won, I was like, this is it. This is our year, right? So I feel bad for that reason. I feel bad for just the fact that Josh Allen had such an incredible run the last couple weeks that it feels like a wasted opportunity. So I look at those as like the three pillars of reasons why I can feel bad for Bills fans. But then on the other side of it, you're right. Like, this is a team that's going to be knocking at the door for the next 3-4 seasons. It doesn't feel like that was your last chance. But when you do look at the Packers, like, Rodgers, like, who knows what's going to happen? They have a lot of players that might not, like, they're over the cap. Like, they have to make a lot of offseason decisions. It does feel like they lost their opportunity. So on the other side of it, you're like, okay, the Bills, we can do it again next year. But it just really felt like the stars were aligning. We talked about this last week. I felt so confident. Everybody felt so confident that this was going to be one of those games that just skyrocketed them into this, a revenge tour. So it does hurt a little bit more that felt like this was your time, right? So I'm going through, and I see both sides of the argument, maybe because I'm trying to be level-headed and try to see, like, the positives. But those are the main three big reasons I feel crappy for Bills fans.
You don't need to be level-headed today. You don't need to be level-headed today. In fact, don't be level-headed today. This is a day where I advise you not to be level-headed.
Yeah, but I'm not like you, JD.
Are you ready for one more emotional swing, Ailish?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so Josh Allen yesterday throws for 329 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, rushes for 68 yards. A game like that, roughly 300 yards passing and four more touchdowns, has happened four times for a quarterback younger than Josh Allen. So it's only happened 25 times in the playoffs, period, and only five times someone as young as Josh Allen or younger. One was Dan Marino, which is a pretty good comparison. Dan Marino also threw an interception that game and didn't rush at all. One was Andrew Luck, who threw three picks in that game. One was Josh Allen last week. So he's got two of the bottom five here. No young quarterback has had multiple games like this. But the other person on the list, unfortunately, is Patrick Mahomes, who isn't going anywhere and is only a couple months older than Josh Allen. So if I'm absolutely there's space to be super, super, super optimistic about the Bills and Josh Allen, there is probably a small part that creeps into that for me, that Patrick Mahomes is just as young and not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. My only thing, so a couple things to that. One is, I almost, whenever I hear those stats, and I know Marino was a part of it, but he was such a statistical outlier that I go, yeah, of course he was there. But it kind of reminds me that the NFL needs to be segmented into different eras when we do the whole nobody's ever done these things. Like, they flashed up a graphic during Sunday of the Rams win. I can't remember if it was I think it was an NFC Championship game where they won, and the score's like 11-7, and the Rams won, and that was the greatest show on turf, and what an offense that they had, winning 11-7 like that, and forget how close our ancestors were of losing football games or winning big playoff games with a score of 11. Like, what would have happened for 11 points to be a winning score? I guess we got close with that Packers game. That was it.
Although on this list, 11 of the 25 happened 2005 or earlier.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, obviously that's a higher rate recently, but there are some pretty big ones. Kerry Collins all over this thing. Who knew?
But so this is another one, though, where I still look at it from a Bills fan perspective. Of course, Patrick Mahomes isn't going anywhere. And yes, we all forget how young Mahomes is sometimes when he, like, I saw a tweet. His playoff legacy has already surpassed Aaron Rodgers. And that's undoubtedly true. That's undoubtedly true.
So is
Blake
Bortles, though.
Yeah, yes, I loved all the grave dancing on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I don't care.
Oh,
Packers
that was
fans.
The best.
You do this to yourself.
NFL Twitter was elite this weekend. Yeah, NFL Twitter elite this weekend. Like, I could not stop scrolling. Like, I'm laying in bed, need to go to bed. I have the show in 5 minutes, and I'm just. It was elite. Everyone came on their A game. All the fans. All of the Aaron Rodgers, vax stuff. Like, I was. Laughing so hard.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, zero sympathy. Just a figure that no one else is really rooting for, so I don't know what to tell you, Packers fans. Everyone wanted you to lose, and especially the way that game went. We'll talk about more. We have tons more football today. Ross Tucker at 7. We're going to talk more about that, Nate, that Bills loss with Nate Geary at 8 o'clock. Obviously, we'll give our breakdowns of more impressions from all of those games. But yeah, that's as good of a sports weekend. That was one where I really did have thoughts like, why do we even watch other sports? You know, like, why? Other sports are just they're down
about
bad.
It too. And it was just so simple. Like, imagine not liking football, you said. Imagine not wanting to watch these types of games. Like, even if you're not a diehard football fan, I had some friends in my group chat. I told you about it. They're not like huge sports fans. And they were like, Ailish, I'm watching this Bills game. Like, how are you feeling? And they've never watched sports before, really. Like, they're not huge football fans, but they understood, like, this is one of those iconic moments. Like, it's just, it was, oh, God, now
there's
I'm feeling all over
there's
a place
just
again.
A drama
the drama.
To football.
The drama.
There's just a drama to football that is different than these other sports. And it's just, it's this blend of big stars and role players and high event play. And yeah, we got a perfect sports weekend. And I'll be honest, it's what made watching the other sports a little bit difficult. One is that it's the stakes difference too, right? You go, it really does put things in perspective. This is how I'm going to pivot to the Leafs thing. It sure put things in perspective for where we're at in the Leafs season as you're watching the Packers, like, actual franchise crumble and the Leafs are playing the Islanders on a January, not even 41 games, not even halfway into the season. But I do want to quickly talk about the Leafs here and then we'll pivot into a bunch of other stuff. just simple question. How did you guys feel about that result? Did it actually do anything for you? Because the question going into the weekend was one of our number one narratives. The number one Leafs narrative, anyways, was how will the Leafs respond to Sheldon Keefe? Ailish, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm.
The Leafs' response in their first game after being called out by Sheldon Keefe was out of give it a letter grade.
A solid B. You know, like, I think you can only, we've talked about this many times, you can only beat the team in front of you. That was their challenge this weekend. They held a 3-1 lead. It was hilarious. It got to 3-1. I'm like, oh no, here we go again. And they played responsible. I'll give them that. It wasn't one of those crazy flat, maybe I'll give them a B+, actually. It wasn't a crazy flashy domination game, but they played well. They played strong defensively, which was a big narrative coming in. I think Mrazek did kind of everything you could expect him to do. Yeah, he looked good. The big reasons that we highlighted this game for narrative was the defense, the goaltending. And I think that I felt pretty comfortable watching that game. They were also pretty physical. Like, they matched the physicality of the Islanders, which was an important thing coming into it. And they don't, of course, the Islanders don't have a lot of offensive power. Like, we know that. So it's easier to maintain a lead and easier to feel confident with Mrazek, but we needed him to have a solid game and for the D to look better. And I think that that was kind of what I got from it.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty solid. I think, you know, the second period to me is probably the best example of what you want the team to look like when they're ahead. It was still kind of foot on the gas. I thought in the third period, they got a little bit back into the habit of playing. You know, you change your identity, you change your style of play a little bit to protect the lead. And sometimes I worry, you know, it's great to be defensive minded, but so much of what defines you is that your team's constantly a threat to go back the other way. And I thought they came off the gas a little bit in the third period there. Maybe some of that was just, hey, Mrazek's had our back here. Let's make sure we get him the W. But small nitpicking there. I thought the second period especially was one of their best periods of the season. And so to do that with the lead and kind of, you know, I'm sure that was a talking point, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, we're up two now. Don't let off the gas.
Big time.
I was fine. Yeah, I was mostly fine with it.
I thought it was a quality game. The opponent was pretty clearly, just not nearly as talented as the Leafs were. What I'll say is this. You're right, Blake. I felt the same way about the second period, where there was a little stretch right before the Leafs tacked onto the lead where the Islanders were really starting to throw the body. Like, Liljegren was Sideshow Bob with the rakes, where it's just he's stepping into one rake and then it's another rake and where the just Islanders blue line is just, or the Islanders forward is like, we're going to hit this guy and we're just going to keep hitting him. We're bullying him. It felt like bullying what they were doing to Liljegren in the second period. And you could feel this kind of, oh boy, are the Islanders about to just impose their will physically on the Leafs? And we've seen Toronto in the past wilt a little bit to that type of play. They didn't. They go and they score two goals immediately. They whip two in the back of the net, and you felt the ice just completely tilt. That was great. That was great. But yes, the third period, this is the only reason why I wouldn't give them a B, is if I'm giving them a letter grade, is I still felt how shaky that final period was. And if you remember, and the goalie's a part of the team. The goalie's a part of the team. They all have to make saves. There's no doubt about it. You're not expecting the clean sheet. You're not expecting them to not give the Islanders a shot. But Mrazek made a save right before the Leafs gave up a power play that I really do think tilted the game, that I do think changed the game. He made a massive stop that if he doesn't make, I kind of feel like the Leafs blow another lead. So huge, huge, huge save, huge, huge, huge game. Two stories out of it, though. One, Mrazek played that well, and he did make that save. It was a reminder of why the Leafs went out and got that guy. And this isn't a you're throwing out all the Jack Campbell information here, but that was a bit of a crack in the door towards more of a split. Like, we're heading into that February where they play, I think it's at the end of January, because they play January 31st. They play 13 games in 28 days. So 13 games in 28 days is a pretty heavy workload. Obviously, we're going to see a ton of Mrazek. I just think that for that stretch, you're going to need both goaltenders to play great. Yeah, and it's going to be a pass-off of, one night this guy, one night that guy, and we're probably going to come out the other side in February having a pretty good feel as to what the dynamic is in net, and that Mrazek does have the ability to make it a conversation.
Yeah, that's all. That's the main thing we needed to see, was Mrazek to be steady, to be someone reliable for when Jack Campbell needs to have some rest. He's been completely overworked. We've seen his numbers go down. We've seen just his confidence be a little bit shaken, even post-game podiums, putting a lot of blame on himself. And I know he does that. But coming forward down the stretch here, and Blake highlighted it last week with the amount of games that got rescheduled in that time, if you didn't feel confident in Mrazek, I don't know how we would be feeling talking about what's next for the Maple Leafs. But I think seeing him have that big save, knowing that that moment was a narrative shift for the game, I think that's all you can ask for from Mrazek, and maybe a good confidence for him. He hadn't been in the net in quite a while. So think about getting in that opportunity, playing, having a good game. Like, I feel confident putting him in on the night of a back-to-back or before a back-to-back against a weaker team. I mean, obviously it's Islanders, bottom of the division. I'd like to see him against like a mid-level tier team, but you got to start with kind of getting that game under your belt, feeling good about it. So yeah, I'm happy with how the Leafs played. Obviously, they were overshadowed by all this football. I don't think I watched a second of the Raptors game last night. No offense to Blake. No, we couldn't do it. But the Leafs were something I had up. I wanted to see how they fared against this kind of like narrative test, how they responded to Sheldon Keefe's comments as well. And I am satisfied with it. I'll put it at that.
Yeah, just to wrap up the kind of goalie thing, JD, you mentioned that condensed schedule. You can condense it even more. There's from the 10th to the 28th, it's 10 games in 19 days. And while there are, quote-unquote, only two back-to-back or one back-to-back in that stretch, you've got
you got to break that down for me, math guy. How 10,
10 games, 12, 14, 17, 19, 21, 22, 24.
You did say they travel a lot too, right? That's tough.
Yeah, there's only one game in that entire slate where they're in the same city they were in the game before. So, yeah, even if there's only one back-to-back, which is traditionally what we highlight, that's and three of those games are out west. That's a tough one. You're going to need both of these guys for sure. You've got 5 games until that stretch kicks in where, you know, if you're being like they have a home and home with the Devils on the 31st of the first, you're going to need Mrazek for one of those. You could justify that being Mrazek's only start between now and then, but I think you're, you know, especially after the steadiness there, even in a favorable situation, like I don't think you're hesitating to make sure Jack's well rested this next little bit.
I will say the one thing that worries me a lot is like with a lot of those travel games, the opportunity for some more COVID protocol is higher because you're traveling, you're entering a bunch of different cities. And I think that there's definitely a higher rate of COVID protocol situations when you're on the road. So it might be a little bit of something to consider in terms of like players on the road. Obviously that's the worst case scenario, but just something that might be a narrative down the road.
Yeah. To me, now that they're not testing asymptomatic players as they
did
should.
Did they start that already? I thought it was after the All-Star game.
I can't remember exactly where it is, but it's pretty
clear. But that would be nice if they started it already.
Yeah, that the league is making this shift. The Leafs have also had a ton of players who have already gotten COVID. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's kind of run through their team. Not that individuals can't get it. We've seen that Justin Hall has been out of the lineup, blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't feel like to me anyways that the Leafs are ever going to have a night where the team is down you know, multiple bodies. Mm-hmm. And Blake just told us, you know, February 6th is where that's supposed to start. Yeah, that's right around the corner. So the vast majority of the stretch, they're going to be able to have no asymptomatic players tested. I got to tell you, this is actually a really great place, I hope anyways, for where we're at with things is I don't really think about COVID that often. I really don't when it comes to sports anymore or this or that. It really does feel as though we're starting to move into a different area, to me anyways. Like, we really are.
So.
You just hear some of the way people are talking now, and I think that, yeah, perception is starting to change on a lot of things, and I think that is for the better, honestly. At some point, we have to, you know, move on a little bit mentality-wise in terms of how we're going to handle these things and live with these things. And it does feel a little bit like, for a lot of people, the tide is starting to turn. But yeah, so with that stretch, here's the other part. Morgan Rielly played over 25 minutes again. He had played 27 minutes in two games before that, 25 minutes the game previous. So people, I'm thinking about it. Top-tier defensemen play a lot of minutes, and Morgan Rielly has played around that this year. He's like somewhere over 24. Someone told me, like, hey, what's the big deal, 25 minutes? I'm like, well, there's only 11 defensemen in the NHL that average more than 25 a night. And Thomas Chabot averages the most at 27, which is something that Morgan Rielly cracked two nights in a row. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit of – I'm curious to see how this ends up playing out over that stretch of how they disperse the minutes or whether or not they do take some more hits when it comes to minutes for players down the lineup, right? They had the Leafs. So it feels as though now the seventh defenseman or eighth defenseman, whatever the defenseman, that there's a revolving door with that job. And they threw in another guy who I basically never heard of before. I'm like, what? Who is this now? Like, who are
Dahlstrom?
You? Dahlstrom. Dahlstrom. Yeah. Yeah. Dahlstrom. So he goes into the penalty box. I'm like, who? I did the Snoop Dogg. Who? Who is Dahlstrom?
That's not a great way to get recognized, going to the penalty box.
Well, yeah, I know.
Time,
it wasn't great.
Thanks.
But he still actually played. Like, I think he got somewhere around 13 minutes, and I thought, yeah, that's what you have to do. And even with those 13 minutes, Morgan Rielly cracked 25. TJ Brody cracked 25. So that is something that top-tier defensemen do. I'm not going to be too worried about it right now. I'm not worried about Morgan Rielly wearing down because the guy is just a physical freak. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things where it actually made me appreciate what Morgan Rielly has done this season. And that is step into the role of someone who is a 25-minute-a-night defenseman that you trust in both ends. Mo has always been a guy that you love the offensive upside, and he had a good year last year, but it's really hard to look back at last season with a lot of, well, wow, now they were in a division with a crappy Canucks team and a crappy Habs team and a crappy Oilers team. There was nobody good. There was nobody good in that division, including the Leafs, it turns out. Including the Leafs, it turns out. But this year, just for him to be such a steady force where he can play penalty kill, where he's the guy that you're trusting on the ice at the end of games, where he's the guy who can still put one in the back of the net and who can still snap the puck around in the offensive zone, who can still break it out with the best of them. It's just, this is a really great evolution of Morgan Rielly's game. And I know we talked about him when he got the contract, but it feels like we haven't talked about him enough this year. And over the course of this weekend, after Saturday night, I did really have the, boy, Morgan Rielly's really important to this team. Boy, when we do the whole core four and the stars of this team discussion, we really do have to start pivoting it into the core five or whatever. Because Morgan Rielly just, he's 100% one of the most important pieces of this team. And just the way that we discussed Toronto Maple Leafs in general, he sort of feels left out of it at times when he really shouldn't be. And that game was yet another example of why not.
You're right. We talked about him so much after he signed his contract because he came out with, like, he signed his contract and he had some of the best games, like, that consistent stretch. And we you know, kind of alluded that might be because he was confident. He finally got, like, he's going to be with the Leafs for the next, whatever, 8 years. But then we kind of just forgot about him. But I thought it was really interesting that some of the players after his game, I think it was Mitch Marner, said, like, he's one of the most underrated players. He should be always in the conversation for an all-star. And he was surprised that he'd never been an all-star. And I thought that's a really interesting point that Mitch Marner came out and said that. They're obviously appreciating what he's had to do, shouldering a lot of that defense core that's been shaky over the last little while. But he might not get a lot of the praise or the respect because we're always talking about how bad the D are. But he has been one of the steady leaders of this team. He day in and day out, like, plays consistent, plays hard. He's definitely a leader as well. And that's a lot to put on. Like, you're a leader. You're also one of the players that plays the most. You're the most consistent, and you're maybe a little bit undervalued. So I definitely think that this weekend he had, I think Saturday night was one of his best games in a while too. He was one of the top players. He was consistent. He was all over the place. So yeah, I think it's time to give him a little bit more respect and a little bit more praise for what he's had to do for the Leafs over the last stretch, for sure.
Yeah, it's hard always to call someone underrated when they play for the Leafs.
True. Maybe underappreciated, I would say.
Well,
the difference between
in the
underrated
context, in the context of the Leafs, he's probably a little under-discussed and underappreciated. In the context of the NHL, the fact that you, when you do look at the list of players that play more than Morgan Rielly, you go, wow, there's a lot of really good defensemen in the NHL, right? But he's having a stellar season. And you're right, there are a lot of different things about Morgan Rielly that you like. And when it comes to, this is where I was at with him in this season. How many defensemen are more important to their team's success than he is right now, right? Like, even with the elite of the elite, like Cale Makar, who's obviously better than Morgan Rielly, There are some Like, Taves behind him has been brilliant this year. And this isn't a takeaway from TJ Brody, because I actually have a I had a TJ Brody thought this weekend too, mm-hmm. where has there ever been a Leaf as good as TJ Brody, whose game is as quiet as TJ Brody, that we just don't talk about ever? Like, TJ Brody exactly. just exists, and he's just there.
He plays a lot of minutes as well.
Sure, he sure does. But who ever has a TJ Brody conversation other than, wow, that's great the way he plays with his stick? Who plays that way with the stick? The breakup of passes that he makes, the way that he plays with it defensively is incredible. But other than that, I don't know what TJ Brody sounds like. You know, I've never seen really his lips move. He's just a stoic figure who's quiet, whose teammates love him, who's solid, but doesn't do anything where you ever really talk about him. Morgan Rielly has, I think, picked up a lot of those things from TJ Brody, and they've just become the silent, steady pair for the Leafs. It's just that Mo also has the offensive upside and the ability to just kind of just take over a game like he did Saturday, which is something that, yeah, you do say, hey, is he a Team Canada defenseman? Is he in that? Mm-hmm. He's in that echelon. He's right there in that tier. And right now, he is just helping carry that blue line. They lose Morgan Rielly, and oh my God, it's Nightmare Factory. So it's really, 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 really critical that he keeps playing this way, and hopefully he's able to maintain this over this tough stretch. Let's take a break. You get to be positive now, I guess.
No, I'm boycotting the A-list. There's no A-list. Nope.
Oh, that's fine. You're
I'm just
going to
be like JD negative
now.
Negative list today.
Do I sound negative today? I sound grateful for amazing football.
Mean,
grateful
in
for
general.
Morgan Rielly. Oh, yeah.
In general.
So let's take a break. Let's do the A-list. And then plenty more football and Maple Leafs talk today. And, yes, we will eventually get to the Raptors game that only Blake watched. Blake and I just picture Raptors Twitter. They're like, the Portland Trailblazers are having quite a game in January. Yes, the Bills game is happening. Oh, my God. Poor Raptors Twitter. Sorry, I had to do it. The A-list next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, A-List Forfar, Blake Murphy. Subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, follow the socials. The A-List next.
What a song. The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Yep, sometimes everything is wrong. Sometimes everybody hurts. Song
not Chiefs fans. They're not
fans.
Hurting. They're feeling great. They're, the Chiefs fans don't relate to you.
They're like,
Niners
turn
fans,
this crap
Rams
off.
Fans. Yeah, they're thrilled.
Yes, thank you, Vic, for playing us in with a depressing song, because now I'm back in that mood. I thought I was doing well. But no, it's time to put a positive spin on things. The best part of the day for some, and for me, it will hopefully skyrocket me into a better feeling. It's time for the A-List.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong! Bing bong!
Bing bong!
What's up, baby?
Ooh, just hearing those bing bongs. They're putting life back into me.
See, I kind of feel like today we should have done a role reversal where everything on the A-list was depressing and sad and just, you
I thought
know,
about
bleak.
It.
And that I Blake and I had to it. Pick you up and be the positive ones. You force us to being contrarians into a different kind of corner.
The thing is, I usually find the things for the A-list like during the weekend. So I already had a nice list and I was like, I should just throw this out the window and
trash
find depressing
it, yeah.
stories. But I thought some people are going to need it this morning, so...
Yeah.
Including myself.
Okay.
So let's start with a Bills-related one. A very petty thing that happened before the game and now looks a little silly, but there's a grocery store called Dash's, and they took down all Kansas-related barbecue sauce, and they would not sell it this weekend. So any barbecue sauce from Kansas or related to Kansas City, I guess there's apparently a lot. I don't know. I'm not a barbecue sauce connoisseur. They took all of that down. And would not sell it in their stores to support the Bills. I think it's a very cute and very lovely thing for this grocery store to do. Unfortunately, it did not work. But yes,
it
apparently
didn't work.
It didn't work. but I like the fact that they thought they could do a little something to support Bills fans. So shout out to the grocery stores across Buffalo.
This is my turn to be the against the A-list guy.
Yes.
Sorry, A-lish. This to me just the Bills didn't get a win and they also didn't get delicious barbecue.
Yeah. I that's where my brain went to is two. One, you gave free advertising globally probably to all those products, right? So some buffalo sauce guy, he doesn't get even in a word in edgewise. Because people go, what sauces are made in Kansas City? And then all of a sudden you get the rollout of, oh, this sauce and that. Yeah, all of them. And two is that you're just, I just pictured these Bills fans eating bland barbecue, you know, having ribs, just plain, dry, dirty ribs, no sauce, and going, it's worth it because of dashes. You know, Ailish, this is the one thing we actually didn't mention in terms of Depresso meter. You know who definitely did not have the, well, at least Josh Allen is great perspective? The poor Bills fans that were at that stadium. I just thought, the poor souls who braved it. And there were moments when they scored that obviously the go-ahead touchdown with 13 seconds
left. You see
left.
A couple of blue people bouncing in the stands. And you're like, and yes, just, you got it, guys.
They had that one booth they kept showing. There was one booth of Bills fans where I kept going, are these people rich? What is this? They showed that one luxury suite where there's just the Bills fans that were losing it, and they kept bumping back to them. But there were Bills fans sprinkled throughout that thing. But I can tell you, walking out of a stadium after a devastating loss amongst, you know, because it's not even just that you lost and that you're feeling horrible. It's that the Chiefs fans are just loud and drunk and celebratory, and they're doing the, like, tap you on the back. Sorry, man. Sorry. Hey, Josh Allen's great, though, man. Oh. Or the people who go, you're bitter. The reason why you're the Bills and we're the Chiefs. Those, oh, I know that happened to people. I've been in those places before. I've been the road fan after a loss, and just the terror that those people, that's going to never go away. The pain for those people is, there's no Josh Allen's going to be good and the future is bright and blah, 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 blah. Like, those people are just somewhere in a dark hotel room, liquor bottles all over the floor, empty pizza boxes, and I guess no barbecue sauce, but that's it.
It's tough. The more that you talk, the more you convince me on the other side of my feeling. No. But let's talk about someone else that was a little bitter this weekend. Okay, so Eric Flynn, the father of Malachi Flynn.
Raptor Nation.
Raptors. This is about all the Raptors I caught up on this weekend. He said some stuff on Facebook. So somebody commented, I guess their Facebook friends, said, let me ask you something. Do you trust Nick Nurse? And Eric Flynn, the father of Malachi, said, I pray for Nick Nurse, but the way he has treated my son, I wouldn't treat a dog that way. Malachi Flynn is a better person than he is a basketball player. Why would you treat a good person that way? And then
first of all, don't use dog in this analogy, because, like, yeah, why would you don't treat a dog? Why would that be a example of how someone would treat something poorly?
Oh, Nick
treat
Nurse
dogs well.
Treats and belly rubs.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I wouldn't treat a dog that way. Like, you wouldn't take them for a walk and, like, give them hugs, like, all the time.
He follows up,
take a million pictures of how cute they are.
He follows up with another one. He says it's personal, and Malachi Flynn has been trusted by every head coach he's ever played for. Nurse, it's personal. Have you forgotten that Kyle Lowry had to tell Nurse that Malachi needed to play?
Yeah, Blake, you got to give us some insight here. I know that Flynn's dad
What's
has
going
a
on?
History of, yeah, getting involved, but that actually
Drama.
Does feel pretty ugly.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I'm Malachi Flynn, I'm not thrilled that my dad is doing that, probably. Eric Flynn's Facebook posts are like a running regular feature of Raptors Twitter when people find them.
Yeesh.
I mean, look, we've talked a lot about how awkward it is that a lot of guys aren't getting chances. And Malachi Flynn is maybe the best example. Even Delano Banton goes down to the 905 for two games. And then he's the one back in the rotation yesterday, not Malachi Flynn. There was the awkwardness of Flynn, you know, getting benched when he was down with the 905 as well. So this just, the further and further we get, the more it seems like a change of scenery trade is on the horizon here, whether it's, you know, at the deadline or this offseason, similar to the Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas things last year, where at this point, if you're the Raptors, you're just recouping anything to get out of the headache and the awkwardness, I guess.
Yeah, here's the difference, though, is people wanted Terrence Davis out of town. He obviously had lost all equity. And Matt Thomas was a low-ceiling player, as low as it gets probably in the NBA. And sorry to Alex Wong, who I know still pines for Matt Thomas Bennett's. Malachi Flynn is a first-round pick who obviously has talent. And if I'm just saying, in terms